Today on Straight Talk Africa, the recent release of political prisoners in Rwanda. Could this be a sign of a new era of political tolerance in Kigali? That discussion is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Sheikh Sali, and today it's a discussion on the significance of the recent release of political prisoners in Rwanda. The question, could this move by the government be a sign of a new era of political tolerance in Kigali? The political winds may be changing in Rwanda, where fierce critics of President Paul Kagame were last week released from jail. Is their release a signal that the Central African country is entering a new chapter of political tolerance? My colleague Esther Githui Ewart has the report.
It is no secret that Diane Rwigara, leader of People's Salvation Movement political party, has been a thorn in the side of the ruling Rwanda Patriotic Front Party, RPF.
RPF owns all businesses, most big businesses in the country, and they keep wanting more and more.
The 37-year-old accountant rose to political prominence in 2017 when she became an outspoken critic of President Paul Kagame's government ahead of the August 2017 election. Diane, alongside her mother Adeline Rwigara and her sister Anne, were arrested in September 2017 and charged with inciting insurrection. The prosecution had sought a 22-year jail sentence for Diane and her mother, but it was reduced to 15 years. After serving more than a year in jail, a Rwandan High Court last Thursday acquitted them of all charges. The three-judge panel in the jam-packed court ruled the charges were baseless. Family members and supporters welcomed their release. A defiant Diane vowed her political journey will continue.
I'm very happy with the court decision. I am continuing with my political journey. Everything I talked about in the past has not been resolved. There are still many political prisoners in the country.
With her Bible in hand, Diane's mother, Adeline, rejoiced. Charges against her and four others were dropped. She had been accused of exchanging WhatsApp messages that pointed an accusing finger at the government for the death of her husband, Assinapol Paul Rwigara, who died in a car accident in 2015. Assinapol was an influential businessman who financed the ruling Rwandan Patriotic Front in the 1990s before falling out of favor with its leaders. The family steadfastly believes he was assassinated.
I praise the Lord, I praise the Lord. I have not much to say except for to say that I have committed no crime, neither myself nor my daughter.
Diane has long maintained that her political journey has not been influenced by her father's death, but rather by the right to freely express herself.
I'm speaking on behalf of everybody who has been a victim and who is not able to get their voice heard.
The release of the Rwigaras came 1 month after the unexpected release from jail of Ingabire Victoire, another woman who sought to run for the presidency in 2010. Ingabire was accused of forming a group to destabilize the government by use of war and terrorism. April 7, 2018, marked 24 years since the genocide in Rwanda. In 1994, more than 800,000 people were systematically murdered throughout Rwanda. The vast majority were Tutsi, but moderate Hutus and others were also targeted. In spite of the reconciliation process, the emotional and physical wounds have been slow to heal. Bishop John Ruchama is president of the National Unity and Reconciliation.
We don't have the luxury to do the economy first, then do the healing of the wounds, the memories of our people, the emotions of our people. That's why we walk with one hand and we wipe the tears with the other one.
To his credit, President Kagame, who took over power after the genocide, is admired for restoring stability in the country and turning around the country's economic growth in a relatively corrupt-free environment. It remains unclear whether the release from prison of these critics of the president signal a new political dawn in the country. Soon after the Rwigara's acquittal, Rwanda's Minister for Justice and Attorney General released a statement saying the government respects the court's verdict on the case of Diane Rwigara and Adeline Rwigara and will carefully study its implications. We condemn all attempts by external actors to inappropriately influence judicial processes in Rwanda. We will continue to vigorously enforce our laws on electoral integrity, public safety, and respect for the judiciary. Esther Githu-Ewart, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Esther, for that interesting report. Joining us here in the studio is Claude Gatebuke, Executive Director, AGLAN, or African Great Lakes Region Action Network. Joining us on the phone from the Rwandan capital, Kigali, is Olivier Nduhungirehe, the Rwandan Minister of State for the East African Community. Also joining us by phone from Kigali is Victoire Ingabire Umuhoza, President FDU in Kingi, or United Democratic Forces, an unregistered opposition political party in Rwanda. And last but not least, Aristide Rwigara, brother of Diane Rwigara. He joined us live from Los Angeles, California. Well, welcome to you all. It's a pleasure to host you today on Straight Talk Africa. I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to be able to interact with you today.
Thank you, Shaka.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Well, good evening, Mr. Nduhungirehe.
Good evening.
I understand that besides being a minister, you are also entitled to being addressed as ambassador. Is that correct?
Yes, it's a title of every ambassador, but I'm Minister of State in charge of East African Community.
I see. How are you today?
I'm fine. Yeah. I'm fine. I'm terrific.
I like that. Thank you so much, really, for coming on the program at the last minute.
Thank you very much.
What is the situation like on the ground, given that you seem to be embracing a new policy of what some critics or observers are characterizing as a possibility of a new era of political tolerance in the Rwandan Republic? Is that true?
First of all, I wanted to correct one thing you said about political prisoners. This is not an issue of political prisoners. There is no such thing as political prisoners in Rwanda. The case of Ingabire, the case of Diane Rwigara are all different cases. There are charges that were leveled against them. There was an investigation, a prosecution, a trial, and a judgment. So those are cases that are individual, that are specific. We should address them as such.
What about Deo Mushaidi, president of PDP, Imanzi, who has actually been in prison since 2010. Do you have any plans to release him too?
You know, Rwanda has laws, and there is a criminal procedure that was applied, for example, to Kizito Mihigo or Victoire Ingabire, who applied for clemency according to our laws. And they were released, given the powers that are given by the Constitution to the President of the Republic. So those are our rules. And then there were other prisoners who were released because they had served two-thirds or one-third of their sentence. Those are implementation of our laws.
I see. What about some critics and some observers who actually say that when it comes to the Republic of Rwanda, we are not talking about an independent judiciary here, that we are actually talking about a judiciary that is subordinate to the executive, who happens to be President Paul Kagame.
But Chaka, the facts have are already contradicting you, because we have, as I said, on those different personalities, a different outcome of the judiciary. We had some of them who were convicted and others who were acquitted. And this is really normal life in any judicial proceeding. For example, the Bigaras were acquitted, while Victoire Ingabire, Deo Mushahidi, and others were convicted. So, and it happens in every country.
That is true. You are very, very right that that is, of course, the process. But what about others who insist, for example, that the release that we are talking about really was not largely because of the independence of the judiciary system in your country, but rather it was because, in their words, not mine, the pressure from the international community?
Frankly speaking, Shaka, do you really think that Rwanda can succumb to a pressure of four members of the U.S. Congress? You know our history, you know the case, this case and others. Really, those who say that don't know what they are talking about. You know, the Rwigaras are not the first to be first people or first personalities to be acquitted in Rwanda. We had several cases in the past. Even we had someone, Leopold Munyakazi, who came from the U.S., who was extradited from the U.S. On the charges of genocide, and who was acquitted on that on those charges of genocide. He was, of course, sentenced for genocide denial, but on the main sentence, he was acquitted. We have other cases of Professor Runyonyi Baragwiriza, who was accused of genocide, and others. So this is really normal procedure. Some are convicted, others are acquitted, and that has nothing to do with politics.
If you were to tell me from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your Rwandan heart and soul, why were these people released, really?
Who are you talking about? Victoire Ingabire or the Rwigaras?
Both.
Those are two different cases. Victoire Ingabire was released in September because she applied in June for clemency. She wrote to the President of the Republic according to our laws, and then she was granted early release. As for Adeline and Diane Rwigara, they were acquitted after a trial by our judiciary. Those are two different cases.
Now, when it comes to Victoire Ingabire, I have read somewhere that she denies that she actually ever applied for a sort of clemency, if you say. And I wish, because she is on the line, you could actually interact with her. Can you interact with her?
I, as we agreed, I will answer to your question, Shaka, and then let others make their statement or debate between themselves. Thank you.
I see. But really, at least in the spirit of democracy, and Rwanda is a nascent democracy, don't you honestly think that you should be very free and willing to engage in a dialogue with your compatriots?
You know, Shaka, tomorrow we have what we call National Mushikirano Council, mm-hmm. which is a national dialogue. Where it will be the 16th. This is a place where Rwandans dialogue between themselves, with the leaders, with the diaspora. So this is a place for dialogue. And I think I will, if you wish, continue to answer to your questions.
I see. You know, Mr. Minister, you know that these people have been prison for quite some time, and obviously, there must be a reason why, at the end of the day, your government finally decided to release them. Now, there are people who are saying that there was a lot of pressure. And as you said, of course, rightly, there was at least some dialogue between your government and some members of the United States Congress. There was also a lobby which mobilized opinion around here belonging to the Eglan, which of course is heavily represented by Mr. Gatebuche. And there are a lot of people who are saying that all this pressure, including some other development partners, that they decided, you decided, your government, that you had to deal. Mr. Nduhungirehe.
Hello, do you hear me?
Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, yes, I do now.
Yes. So what really made your government finally decide that these two individuals can actually go?
Shaka Sari, once again, those are different cases. Rwigara, Adeline and Rwigara Diane were not released by the government. They were released, acquitted by the judge after a trial, an investigation, a prosecution, and then a trial. So it's not the government. In Rwanda, governments don't acquit people who are indicted. So this is really a different case than the case of Ingabire, who was released by the president after an application for clemency. So I don't understand why we are mixing with so-called pressure by four members of a Congress. We didn't enter into negotiations or talk with them because the U.S. Congress has no jurisdiction over Rwanda, let alone our judiciary. So we need to be clear on the fact here, because you can say whatever you want to say about the pressure here and pressure there. The fact is that decisions were taken according to our laws. According to there was a judiciary for one case, for the president for another case, because those situations are provided for in our laws.
Well, I understand what you are saying, Ambassador Nduhungirehe. But let's face it, you talk about how, for example, Diane Rwigara was released by a judge, which is true. But what about the fact that the judge happens to be a public servant and works for the government of the Republic of Rwanda, the last time I checked?
But if you want to say that he's a public servant, yes. But the judge, the High Court, is the judiciary, among the judicial power. And that judicial power is independent from the other two branches of the government and independent from other countries who think that they can pressure our judiciary. That didn't happen, and that will not happen because we have the rule of law in our country, and judges take decisions independently, even against the prosecution. You've seen this case in other cases. I don't know why people are contradicting themselves, accusing Rwanda imposing decisions on judges, while we have a case in point where we see the judiciary acquitting people who were prosecuted by our system, by the prosecutor general. So we need to be consistent where we are accusing Rwanda of this or that.
Now, in the case of Ingabire, now that your government has been magnanimous, are you going to go ahead, for example, and allow her party to be registered, given the current democratic dispensation in Rwanda?
That is another matter. There was a case of Ingabire, and then this is another matter, and I'm not in charge of that. I think the case was handled according to the laws. For the political part of that, I think other institutions or instances will take a decision according to the facts, according to the application.
What do we need to do Ambassador, so that at least at some point in a democratic spirit, we at least can organize a debate where you feel very free, very comfortable to have a dialogue with your compatriots.
But I already said that there is a dialogue with our compatriots in different institutions. I gave you an example of the Tomorrow Mushikira. No, but there we are a free society. We have political parties in Rwanda. I think we have 11 political parties, and then we had in the last election in September the very first time that we have all political parties represented in the parliament. This is a place for debate. We have for the first time two opposition parties that are in the parliament. And we will, of course, continue enriching our democracy, talking to each other, and do all those who want to get part of that can do so. We even Victoire Ingabire is now in Rwanda. She's participating in different activities. She can be part of the debate. So I don't think that we exclude anybody from the debate, and we will continue to be open.
I see. Let me go to Aristide. Aristide Rwigara, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
I am terrific. What about you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Well, you heard, of course, the minister talking about how the government treated your sister. What do you say about that?
Well, it's totally false what he's saying. The judiciary is not independent in Rwanda. My sisters were only released because of international pressure. And we thank everybody who offered support and applied that pressure. There just was so much exposure of the gross injustice of the extreme persecution towards my family that they had to appear to be acting in a democratic way, but this acquittal is not at all a reflection of some sort of equitability in the judiciary system in Rwanda. And actually, I mean, Mr. Nduhungirehe was kept mentioning the acquittal of my sister and my mother as some proof of as some proof of fairness from the legal system in Rwanda, but the prosecution in Rwanda just announced that they're going to appeal the decision. And so I don't even know how they can use the acquittal anymore to try to validate some sort of democratic direction they're going towards, because they just announced that they're going to appeal the decision, mentioning that the court did not give proper weight to the evidence they presented, which makes no sense because they presented zero evidence. They had no evidence because the case was fabricated in the first place, so of course there could be no evidence. And actually, my sister sent me a statement that, if you may allow me, I'd like to read. It's her response to this decision by the prosecution to appeal the case. I'd like to read it, if you have time, of course, if that's okay with you.
But Aristide, if indeed the government is going forward to appeal the case, doesn't that make his point that the judiciary system in Rwanda is indeed independent?
Well, it may be what they're maneuvering towards as well. They realize that everybody mentioned the pressure as the cause why, as the reason why they released my sister and my mother. So it may very well be that they realized that to save face, the prosecution had to appeal the case to make it look like, you know, they're acting independently from the president. But since they presented no evidence in court to argue that evidence was not given proper weight, is an absurd statement. So the appeal is obviously driven by motives other than proper legal reasons.
The minister says that Rwanda is a free society. Do you agree with him? If he were to talk to me from the deepest, better part of your Rwandan heart and soul, do people in Rwanda have a right to own an opinion that is different, for example, from the ruling RPF party or from the government?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Rwanda is one of the most repressive regimes on the planet. I mean, look what happened to my sister because she opposed the government. As soon as she declared her candidacy, what did they do? They tried to silence her by putting out fake nudes online. And then they made up a whole story about forgery of signatures. That was a story that was totally fabricated. I mean, my sister's case, my family's case, is a very egregious example of how repressive the Rwandan state is, and that there is absolutely no freedom of expression. If there was, she would have been allowed to run. If there was freedom of expression, they wouldn't have locked up Dewa Mushahidi and countless other journalists who end up being killed or jailed. Rwanda has a history since 94. There have been beheadings of opponents when it's the presidential election, or opponents, critics of the regime end up in prison. This is well documented. Amnesty International has documented it. Human Rights Watch has documented it. The United States has documented it. So there could be no further thing from the truth that Rwanda allows freedom of expression. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You can't even own anything in Rwanda. You don't even have freedom of ownership. They killed my father because he was independent in business, because he wouldn't allow them to come and take over his businesses. So,
wait a minute. Aristide, you are making very, very serious charges here. Who killed your father?
The RPF, the Rwandan government. It's no secret to anybody in Rwanda. It was no secret to anybody as soon as it happened, because that the way they staged the accident was so amateurish that everybody could see through it right away. And then there were so many witnesses, and my mother and my sister saw it themselves. You know, they saw them putting my father in a body bag when he was still alive. They saw the police turning away the ambulance, the Red Cross vehicle, and all the official official vehicles of help that were coming to the scene. And then they saw my father with new wounds on the back of his head when after the police had transported him in their vehicle. You know, they finished him up in their police van. It's a fact that they did kill him. It's a serious charge because it's a serious crime they committed. And I mean, it didn't even stop with my father's assassination. They destroyed our hotel a few months later because we called for an investigation into my father's death. So as a way to send a message to Rwandans that you do not question our method, basically, you do not call out our crimes. They destroyed our hotel, and it's been a long-standing persecution that started in 1995 against my father, and recently it's come to the attention of the international community, you know, with everything they did to my sister. I mean, so to get back to the original point of is there freedom of expression in Rwanda, why would my mother have to spend a year for sending WhatsApp messages to her sister in Canada, where she's expressing her grief over the murder of her husband? How is that? How are those grounds to be sent to jail because you're communicating privately with your sister? I mean, this is right there, like perfect evidence that it's not just that there's no freedom of expression, like in a public forum. You don't even have freedom of expression on your own phone with your family. So, no, Rwanda is it's pathetic how
again, Aristide, you are really making very, very serious charges here. Do you have incontrovertible evidence on that?
Yes, I do. I mean, my mother just spent a year in prison, and they had to acknowledge in court that private messages do not constitute divisionism or sectarianism or whatever. They had to make those statements because they were acquitting them. I mean, not that they were acquitting them because they were independent, of course, but, well, I guess they had to justify. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that the evidence is there. I mean, the facts are there. They're out there in the public. And as far, and if you're asking for evidence for my father's murder, my mother and my sister saw it with their own eyes, and there were many, many witnesses on the scene. And you know, they pretended there was a car accident that he died in, that my father died in. To this day, the driver of the truck that supposedly hit his car has never been made public. You know, the way they conducted the whole thing was so, it was very sloppy and amateurish, probably because they didn't expect us to come out and challenge their lies, or maybe that's just how they do things. So now Rwanda has zero freedom of expression, and these releases that you saw recently are not some magnanimous state of mind from the regime. My sister's acquittal is not independent from the judiciary. As I said, they're appealing the case anyway. And it's all because of international pressure. That's all that it is. It's international pressure.
I'm afraid that still timing is not our best ally. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. So please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
We're talking about the news and issues you're talking about.
Sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick.
And Hadiza Kiari.
And Ayan Bior.
And Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
Able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
A reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, and you can also watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Nigeria is preparing for general elections in February 2019. President Muhammadu Buhari is running on an ambitious anti-corruption agenda. But opposition leader Atiku Abubakar believes the president has not tackled the country's stifling economic problems. In 2018, unemployment jumped by 30%. An in-depth discussion on the future of Nigeria on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Our topic for today is the significance of the recent release of political prisoners in Rwanda and whether this is a sign of a new era of political tolerance in Kigali. Our guests are Claude Gatebuche, Executive Director of EGLAN, or African Great Lakes Region Action Network. Victoire Ingabire Umuhoza, president of the United Democratic Forces and an unregistered opposition political party in Rwanda. She joins us via telephone link up from Kigali. And Aristide Rwigara, another of Diana Rwigara, Rwigara's brother of Diana Rwigara, who joins us from Los Angeles in California. Well, I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
I'm also profoundly honored to be back on Straight Talk Africa, Shaka.
You're most welcome. Are you there, Ms. Ingabire?
Yes, I'm there.
How are you?
Fine, thank you, and you?
I am terrific. You obviously must have been following the conversation.
Yes, I do.
Are you in a position, for example, to talk to us from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your Rwandan heart and soul why you were released? Why were you released? Did you apply for clemency?
As a start, I would say that I am very happy to be out of prison after 8 years. I spent 8 years in prison, but that does not mean that I am a criminal. I did not commit any crime. As you know, the Africa Court of Human and the People Rights in its ruling on November 24, 2017, lured that my right for freedom of expression has been violated, that my defense right was violated, and ordered reparation from the Rwanda government because they violated my right. If I was not in prison because I was a criminal, I was in prison only because I was a politician. My release was due to the President Clemens, that is true, and not because of the acknowledgement that my right as opposition politician had been violated. Indeed, I was released with more than 1,000 people who were not politicians.
Did you apply?
Mr. Nduhungire says that I was convicted by Rwanda's court. He knows very well that I was convicted, but I was not a criminal. When I applied to be released. I not applied to say that I am a criminal. That is two different things that should be clear.
So were you a political prisoner or were you a prisoner of conscience?
A political prisoner, because what they accused me was that I pushed population to stand up against the government. This, I was accused to minimize genocide only because I asked that we need justice for everybody to have genuine reconciliation in Rwanda. We need justice for everybody. That is not a crime to be put in the prison.
When you talk about...
He's saying that there is no political prison in Rwanda. That is not true. I would tell you that we have, for example, the Secretary General of my political party, Sibomana, is in prison only because he was in the court one day, wearing a T-shirt where you can read, "We need democracy, free Victoire." Only because of that, he's in prison. They are in Shahidi. They talk about it. We have 9 members of my political party who are still in prison. They are arrested last year, and until today, they don't have any trial. Among them are Vice President Twagirimana, and he's missing since October. We are still asking the government to find him. I can't understand if Mr. Nduhungirehe say that there is no prison in Rwanda. They are. And there are more, and we ask the government to release them like they release me, like they release Diane.
Now, if you were to talk to us, again, from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your Rwandan heart and soul, do you believe, for example, that the Rwandan judiciary system is reasonably independent to make independent decisions? Because there are some people who say that the Rwandan judiciary system and the Rwandan legislative system are subordinate to the executive, who happens to be the president of the republic.
Yes, that is true. We have one political party, RPF, who have the power about everybody, about every station of the government. The justice are not independent. If the president said before the parliament that they can put someone again in prison, that means that if he gives the... He ordered the judge to put someone in the prison, they did. Does not mean that the judges are independent. No, I don't believe so.
What do you think needs to be done and must be done in order to restore social, economic, political justice in the Republic of Rwanda?
I think what we need is to set up, to create conditions and putting in place laws and regulations that make easy for the opposition to exercise their role in the democracy. It is about the opposition being the eye of the public to point out where the government is going wrong. What the government we have today is not yet accepted. If you criticize the government, they say that you are enemy of the country. But I think that nobody can pretend to love this country more than I do. Every Rwanda likes his country, and the government has to accept it and has to listen to everybody. And what we need also is dialogue. I hear Mr. Nduhungire saying that tomorrow they have a dialogue. But the dialogue we need in Rwanda is the dialogue to pave a way for a better future and a peaceful coexistence and a national building spirit among Rwandese people. And this dialogue has to be between the government and the opposition. Meet the people who have the same vision. I think that the people will meet tomorrow are the people who are in the government. They are the same people. We have the same vision. But what we need is the dialogue between interlocutors that don't share the same vision, and that we can find in same views and the approach to resolve the problem we have in our country.
Now that you are free, Ms. Ingabire, what are your plans? And we're talking about short, medium, and long-term plans in terms of your struggle for opening up the political space and the democratic space more in your country.
Yes, I will stay trigger with my colleagues in opposition to ask the government to accept to open up political space in Rwanda, because we need it. And the government knows that the exclusion of the opposition is the factor of instability in our country. And I think nobody need again what happened. We know that the cycle of violence in Rwanda was always because of the political of exclusion. And I think that the government will accept or upper to dialogue with the opposition.
Do you plan to continue leading your party? And in fact, do you...
Of course.
Do you think that your party is likely to be finally registered sooner or later?
Later, I think. But the priority for us is not to register my political party. The priority is to have political space. Because, you know, you have to know something. For example, local administration is the monopoly of the ruling party. But at the same time, opposition political parties are obliged to pass through them, even to apply for authorization to organize a meeting. I cannot get authorization for a meeting if I will ask a member of the political party who earn the power and who does not like to have opposition.
I see. Claude, talk to me. You seem to be very skeptical that what we are looking at in Kigali is not perhaps the beginning of a new era, a new political dispensation, essentially what people are characterizing, frankly, as political tolerance.
Absolutely. This is by no means what's happening in Rwanda. The release of Victoire Ingabire, Kizito Mihigo, Diane Rwigara, her mother, and by the way, also Diane Rwigara's sister, who was also initially held captive by the government and then finally taken into court. None of this signifies a new era of political openness in Rwanda. This is by no means what's happening in Ethiopia, for example, where we're seeing an opening after long, many years of dictatorship in that country. What we're seeing in Rwanda is Rwanda succumbing to pressure from the outside. I want to add one thing real quick from the report at the beginning of the show. There was a mention of Rwanda being corruption-free. That is not correct, because a couple years ago in the Panama Papers, there was Emmanuel Ndahiro.
Emmanuel Ndahiro.
Exactly, who is a very close aide to President Paul Kagame,
yes.
Cited in those papers. There is also the Agaciro Fund.
But let's face it, in fairness to the Rwandan government, Transparency International, and even the Mo Ibrahim Foundation, for example, thinks the world of Rwanda.
I don't think they do that with a straight face. And it would be funny if it wasn't so
what
sad.
What kind of face would that be?
I think it's not serious. By the way, Transparency International is also giving an award to President Museveni, I think, for anti-corruption. So to
really?
Me, that, yes. And this is a president that's known to have swindled money for AIDS relief. So there's all kinds of Transparency International cannot be taken seriously when they rank a country on the basis of the likability of, the president or, basically the president being a servant of Western powers. And I think
but
that's...
What about when they say, for example, that Nigeria is not only suffering from corruption, but malignant type of corruption, Cameroon, and what have you? Do you believe them?
Well, that's very easy to see. They are stating the obvious. That's almost like preaching to the choir, because anybody with eyes can see that, Nigerian officials, not Nigerian people, not everybody, and Cameroon, and a lot of other countries, by the way, in Africa, they are rife with corruption, officials taking bribes, the kickbacks, the good old boy system. You name it, nepotism, it's rampant on the continent. And so, we can talk about Nigeria and we can talk about Cameroon, but I think it goes way beyond, those two countries. And I think Rwanda is one of them where the low-level corruption, where a local official will commit corruption, will not happen. But the high-level corruption happens. I wanted to give one more example. There is a fund in Rwanda called the Agaciro Fund. It was put in place when one of President Kagame's generals, General Karenzi Karake, was arrested in England.
I remember.
And his bail was set to $1 million. Sorry, let me go back. It was previously. It was during the M23 invasion of the Congo. When Rwanda was sponsoring the invasion of the Congo, General James Kabarebe, General Charles Kayonga, and General Jack Nziza, who are very close to President of Rwanda, were involved. And the international community...
But Karachi Karenzi, when you talk about his arrest in London, was indeed because of allegations that he played a key role in killing some Spanish citizens?
That's correct. And this is on the record. Rwanda was fighting hard to bring him back because they do not want Kagame exposed in terms of the crimes that he's committed, the number, the thousands and millions of Africans who have perished at the hands of the RPF and Kagame's forces inside of Rwanda and inside of the Congo. That was the case of Karake. So going back to the Gachiro Fund in 2012, the international community stopped aid. That's why we know that even these trials are have stopped because of, or these prisoners have been released, political prisoners have been released because of international pressure. So when they cut aid, Rwanda needed money because it's very dependent on international aid. And what they did was institute a fund, Agaciro Fund. And that fund was basically to come up with the funds to supplement what they were losing in aid. They were losing millions and millions of dollars in aid. And what ended up happening is they are taking money out of people's bank accounts, out of paychecks, without the people's consent or with forced consent. That is corruption at the highest level, but you're not going to see it from a local official. And that's at the policy level of the RPF, which is the ruling party.
Let me ask you my very favorite question. Do you, in fact, have what you would call incontrovertible evidence, not liable to falter?
Absolutely. If a person has...
What is it?
So a number of things. One, people's salaries being cut to contribute to the Agaciro Fund. That is a fact. That is out there, and that's affecting generally every Rwandan that works. The other are business people who are forced and coerced into donating into that fund, money out of their businesses that they otherwise wouldn't donate. So those are incontrovertible evidence that this is corruption at the highest level because people's money are being taken by officials, and there is no consent.
If you had an opportunity, for example, to appear in court, would you produce those documents in a court of law?
I will give you my favorite answer. 300%. I would have the
300% out of 100.
Yes.
I like that. Now, let me ask you another question. Let's go back to the case of Diana Rwigara. You had the minister, Ambassador Nduhungirehe, talking about how, for example, in her particular case, it was a judge who made the call. Do you think that this judge who made the call is not independent? Do you think that this judge who made the call may in fact have received a telephone call from somebody who is more powerful, just in the case of a lot of, you know, societies that are democratically challenged? When you talk to an official, why are you doing this? They will say, orders from above.
You know, sometimes these claims make me want to laugh, but these are serious matters. Absolutely, the judge had to receive a call on what ruling to give. Because two examples. Prior to Victoire Ingabire going to prison, President Kagame pronounced, this was maybe a month or two before she went to prison, that she will be punished and she will go to jail. When Diane was initially put in jail, President Kagame, in a very angry speech, talked about how, you know, people have fooled a young woman into, you know, going into politics, and now she's paying the price. And then the words that he used was, "Nabe otumotsi mujihome," meaning let her, you know, feel the heat in prison. He indicated those were his decisions. And then, in turn, after the release of Victoire, when Victoire contradicted the government of Rwanda that claimed that she apologized for committing crimes, which she's stated she has not apologized, the president made another angry speech and said, by the way, I hear there are people who are saying they didn't apologize for their crimes. If they keep saying that, we're going to put him back in jail. So I'm pretty sure that the judge was not independent. The judge was not even as powerful as the Rigara family. And if something like this is happening to the Rigara family, just imagine what's happening to the average person in Rwanda. Because the Rigara family contributed to the RPF. They gave a lot of money. The father, he gave a lot of money to the RPF during their war.
There is evidence that he was one of the key financiers.
Exactly. And they turned around, and not only did they take his life.
What about
they are rubbing his...
Mr. Ayabatwa.
Hey, there you go. Another one, Ayabatwa Rujugiro, who is a big business person in Africa, and thankfully he's kept a lot of his money because he's diversified his businesses outside of Rwanda. But he also was a major financier for the RPF, and not only did they take his businesses, they also want to imprison him and his brothers. So it's the way the RPF treats even the people who are most favorable to them is just indicative of the amount of repression there is in Rwanda. So this judge absolutely has no power to make this decision on his own.
But how can you honestly characterize the RPF as such? Because the last time I checked, when you meet people in Washington, when you go across the world, when people are talking about Africa, they talk about Rwanda. That is where it is happening. Rwanda, for example, has been characterized, among other things, as the Singapore of Africa. Rwanda has been, you know, the leader of Rwanda, for example. I have been told by a lot of people who say when you talk about problems in Africa, they will give you an example of Major General Paul Kagame, retired but not tired. They will tell you
he's
this is the best
fatigue.
Thing that ever happened politically in Africa since sliced bread.
You know, I would equate that to the time when the whole world believed that the earth was flat, and they actually killed people for demonstrating that the world was not flat, thinking that Kagame and the government of Rwanda are an example is almost being in that time when people thought the earth was flat. It's incorrect. And obviously, evidence is slowly emerging. I would point to a couple of books. One is called In Praise of Blood by Judy River that shows how the RPF is actually a criminal enterprise. This is something that we know. Some of us have actually seen in action. You know, we've survived the atrocities. And then there's also a book by Helen Epstein called America, Uganda, and the War on Terrorism that also touches on the RPF's crimes. So the RPF, to me, when you see Western governments praising them, and Paul Kagame, they are an agent of Western governments. The other, I would equate them...
of Western governments in what sense?
The basic example I can give is during slavery, you had Africans being sold into slavery, and you had Africans selling other Africans into slavery. The RPF and the government of Rwanda is the type of Africans that sold other Africans into slavery because they have done the bidding of the West. They provide troops in Darfur and Haiti and the Central African Republic for peacekeeping missions for the UN. They basically supplement Western militaries where the Western militaries are unwilling to go. They work with multinationals.
Unfortunately, once again, time happens not to be our best ally.
Thank you, Shaka.
On that note, thanks to our guests, Olivia Nduhungirehe, Claude Gatebuche, Victoire Ingabire Umhoza, and Aristide Rwigara. Thank you all for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Rwanda. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.